Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. This is the Herd. Live in wet and again rainy Los Angeles. We are on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell. Best 10 minutes you'll hear on the matchups this weekend, Saints, Rams, Chiefs, New England. Joining me now, Joy Taylor, after a very, very fun week. How are you, Joy?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Good morning. I went to a NBA game last night. I watched the other LA team. The Clippers get whacked by the Utah Jazz. And there's a story this morning, and I think it's very interesting, and I want to start there. The Lakers kind of released something yesterday, a little press release saying, yeah, LeBron will be back in here just a couple of days. You know, just like a random press release. He's being evaluated by the team medical staff and physicians. He'll not travel with the team on the upcoming two-game roadie. Has been cleared to return to practice commencing next week in progress towards a return thereafter. Yeah, it's just kind of a random press release, no big thing. Oh, but the reaction by Rich Paul in LeBron's camp, a little more than sensitive, quote, we don't give a blank what nobody thinks. We're going to do what's best for him. When he feels he is best, he'll play. We're not on nobody's timeline. Look, LeBron's in his 16th year. We don't owe nothing to nobody. When he's ready, he'll be back. It's as simple as that. Excuse me? So the Lakers just released a very common press release, and Rich Paul delivered a double middle finger. Whoa! Folks, it's a six-week injury. I was told yesterday it's more serious than people are letting on. And LeBron is a guy that uses his own people and a team staff. Six-week injury. Already missed 11 games. We've never had this with LeBron. He's the all-time NBA leader in minutes played, playoff minutes played. He's actually played like three other full seasons in just like playoff games. He's like a baseball pitcher that goes to Game 7 of the World Series 7-8 years in a row. He's not getting more dynamic. This is a real injury. Previously, the most games he'd missed in succession were 8, and that was when he went down to D-Wade, and they worked out in Miami after he left and went to Cleveland, and it was almost precautionary. It wasn't a real injury. We're at 11 games. It's probably going to get to 15. And oh, by the way, every other star in this league has been hurt. Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard, James Harden, Westbrook, Paul George, Joel Embiid. Everybody in this league gets hurt except LeBron. And now LeBron's hurt. They're saying it's a 3 to 6 week injury. Folks, he didn't get touched by anybody. He slipped on the floor, heard a pop. And here's the thing with LeBron. LeBron's great. Argue he's the GOAT. But he's no longer the best two-way player in the league. Kawhi Leonard is. He's no longer the best closer at the rim. Giannis is. He's no longer the best scorer. James Harden is. Durant, Steph Curry are. He was number one in all of those 5-6 years ago. Let me just throw this out there. LeBron comes back in a week. Plays for a month and a half. It's late March. And he hears another pop. Does Anthony Davis want to join him? There's a new trend with LeBron. Oh, he's human too. And I think what this shows is that the LeBron-Laker situation, there is not perfect harmony. Kobe Bryant and Magic Johnson were emotionally and physically all in on the Lakers. Let's just say LeBron's at the bar having a cocktail, hasn't gone into the restaurant yet. I was told when he first arrived, he was reluctant to sign basketballs with the rest of the players. He uses his own training staff. He still doesn't quite know if he's got a number two on this roster, nor does he know if he'll land Anthony Davis. When LeBron joins your team, and I understand this, he's always felt he and his camp, hey, we're doing you a favor. Deliver for us. It's why Dan Gilbert said at the end, I want my team back. It's why Pat Riley at the end said, it's LeBron and everybody else. This thing is not in full harmony. And here's the problem. There's real tension with LeBron and the Lakers. Is Luke the guy? Do we have another guy? Do you keep Lonzo and Brandon Ingram? When Boogie Cousins comes back, if he stays in Golden State, what's the point? But the scariest part in all of this, the scariest part is this entire empire of LeBron is built on his body. He's never been the most fluid scorer. He's not the best ball handler in the league. He's not the best shooter in the league. He's not the best rebounder in the league. He's the best body of all time. It is the temple to the empire. And it's now hurt, untouched, slipping. Here a pop, 6-week injury. Rich Paul's reaction speaks volumes. Little fear. The temple, the body, is like everybody else's. That was a massive overreaction, a middle double finger to a simple, common, pedestrian press release. There's real tension. This proves it. Let me shift to this. Couple of big football games. Not sure if you've heard about them. Rams are at the Saints. Patriots at Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes, a very good player. I don't know. I mean, MVP, I guess. A terrific player. He said yesterday, and this is not surprising because this happens all the time, that the first time he faced New England, they kind of confused him.
I mean, they do what they always do, and that's they come out with unscouted looks, stuff that they haven't shown in weeks, maybe in years, and they try to throw it on you and surprise you. And when you play teams of this caliber, you play teams with this much history of knowing how to win and capitalizing on people's mistakes, I mean, you can't come back and win games like that. And it was shown that game. And so for us, we have to learn from that, know that we can't make those mistakes. We have to come out with our best effort from the beginning of the game all the way through the end, and it's going to be a dogfight for the entire game if you want to try to come out with a win.
I will pick this game tomorrow on the show. We are 8-0 straight up in our 8 playoff games. I just want to remind everybody, and enjoy what I'm going to do is just simply, I'm just going to remind people of something that has happened this year.
Okay.
This is not an opinion. I'm just going to remind you of what's happened. Patrick Mahomes' biggest games this year. Against the Patriots, lost 2 turnovers. Against the Rams, lost 5 turnovers. At Chargers, at Seahawks, loss. And they did beat the Colts at home. By the way, a rebuilding team. And he didn't play brilliantly. I want to remind people in Tom Brady's 5 biggest games this year. I'm not going to count the Bears win. Chiefs, Packers Sunday Night Football, Vikings Sunday Night Football, Steelers Chargers, they're 4-1. Tom Brady had fewer turnovers in all 5 games than Patrick Mahomes had in 1 against the Rams. I'm just reminding you of facts. I am sorry if they collide with your feelings, but Kansas City is 2-4 this year against playoff teams. And New England is 4-0 against playoff teams. I think it's an incredibly fair narrative. Sorry if it gets you all derailed in Kansas City. It's a very fair narrative to say Kansas City has mostly played well in big games, but really hasn't learned how to close. It's also a very fair narrative to say New England against playoff teams, still the best closers in the league. New England has not lost against a playoff team this year. New England stubbed their toe against bad teams who consider the Patriots a Super Bowl. The Jags, Tennessee, Detroit, Miami Dolphins. But when they play the good teams, they went 4-0. And Brady was overwhelmingly brilliant. The one exception all year, and I didn't count the Bears win in Chicago, was the Pittsburgh game. And that was a game in which Josh Gordon, we later found out 48 hours later, had derailed, gone off course, and they cut him. And so they didn't really have anybody to throw to down the field late. You remember that. It was odd. We talked about it the next day. Why didn't they look her throw to Josh Gordon? 36 hours later, he's off the team. These are just facts. Biggest games this weekend. Kansas City's played generally well, hasn't learned to close. New England still best closers in the league. Was that fair? Was that incendiary? Was that controversial? Was that a hot take or anything?
I mean, you're pointing to numbers.
Yeah, data. I'm not trying to. Tomorrow's the big picks.
So are you going to surprise everyone with your pick?
Well, America's media icon delivers only data and facts, and so I will deliver what I have been working on these all week, Joy. And I have I feel so strongly about one, I can't contain myself. I can't contain myself. That's how I feel.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Kyrie Irving came out yesterday, used to play with LeBron, bailed on him. And LeBron James didn't like it because LeBron James thought he was helping Kyrie Irving grow. Kyrie Irving was a one-and-done guy at college, played 8 college games at Duke, couldn't get off campus fast enough. Well, Kyrie Irving is now admitting, yeah, I was kind of learning stuff from LeBron, and maybe I should have been learning more stuff and not trying to get out of town so fast. Here's Kyrie Irving.
It was a big deal for me because I had to call Bron, you know, and tell him, like, you know, I apologize for being that young player that wanted to everything at his, you know, at his fingertips, and I wanted everything to be at, you know, my threshold. I wanted to be the guy that led us to championship. I wanted to be the leader. I wanted to be all that. And, you know, the responsibility of being the best player in the world and leading a team is something that's not meant for many people. And Bron was one of those guys that came to Cleveland and tried to really show us what it's like to win a championship. And it was hard for him. And sometimes getting the most out of the group, it's not the easiest thing in the world.
First of all, I like that Kyrie Irving admits it. That's a real sign of maturity. Kyrie Irving... Of course, Kyrie Irving is simply a talent and not a leader. The NBA's got a leadership problem. I went to a game last night. It was a bunch of talented players. Who was really a leader? Steph Curry's a leader. Steph Curry grew up with an NBA father and then didn't try to get out of college as soon as he could. If you look at the Golden State Warriors, it's not a coincidence that Steph Curry went to 3 years of college and Klay Thompson 3 and Draymond Green 4 and Andre Iguodala 2. Steve Kerr also a big part of the college experience. But the basketball culture in America, my friends, is broken. The basketball culture in America now is spot a talent in high school and let's get him paid in the pros. College basketball bad. No, it's not. College, for all of us, men and women, is the time we grow up. I had to buy my own groceries, get a job and pay for things. I almost flunked out. I wasn't a grown-up. You kind of learn to be a man, and I'll just speak for 19-year-old me. I learned to be a man in college. I had to figure out a checkbook and a budget and do my shopping and do my own clothes. Nobody made my bed. Nobody washed my stuff. College matters. Dwayne Wade taught LeBron how to be a leader in Miami. Until that point, LeBron was just talented. But LeBron joined the Miami Heat. Shane Battier, 4 years of college. Ray Allen, 3 years of college. D. Wade, 3 years of college. Udonis Haslam, 4 years of college. Men, leaders. LeBron, to that point, was just talented. It is then when LeBron became a leader. Talked about politics. Took vocal tribal opinions that were unpopular to many. That's what being a man is. The NFL has never struggled with this because the NFL culture, the football culture in America, is about developing boys into men. You're 19 years old, you get recruited. The university says you will not play. We will redshirt you. Grow up, get stronger. You will then play 3 to 4 years, come out at 23 years old. Statistically, football players in America get married sooner. Older men leading a family, leading an offensive line. They walk into this league like Russell Wilson, 4 years of college, and J.J. Watt, and they're community leaders overnight. But the basketball culture is simply about find the talent and get it paid. Yesterday, Scottie Pippen, submitted to all of us that Zion Williamson should no longer play at Duke. Let's just get him paid. So therefore, Zion Williamson will be a long list of marvelously talented NBA players who have no real leadership skills. Kyrie Irving had two opportunities in his life to learn from two great leaders, Mike Krzyzewski, and yet he couldn't leave him fast enough, and LeBron James, after Miami, a real leader, and he couldn't leave him fast enough either. I went to an NBA game last night, and when I look at this league, I don't see leaders. I see talent. Kevin Durant's too flaky. James Harden's into James. Same with Westbrook. Kawhi doesn't talk. Steph Curry is a leader, and a big component to that is college, is playing within a system. LeBron was just talented forever. Then he joined a group of players who had been to college, been on their own. Don't be so fast to roll your eyes at the college experience. Yeah, I know. You want to get paid. I get it. And maybe over time, the NCAA will figure something out. I'd like to hope they would. But Kyrie Irving had two chances in his life to learn how to be a leader. He couldn't exit either fast enough.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Andy Reid was saying this yesterday, coach of the Kansas City Chiefs. He was saying it on Tom Brady. He goes, look at the film, and like the age thing hasn't hit him. And so, you know, there are things that happen, and we know everybody ages. Baseball had a steroid problem, so 37-year-old guys got way better. I don't suspect Tom Brady's doing that stuff. But people are looking at film and saying it's hard to see the decline. It is interesting to point out that with no deep threat and a tight end in Gronk, who will be a Hall of Famer, that was a shell of himself, and with Julian Edelman missing September. Now, I just want you to think about this. No deep threat, no longer a dominating force at tight end. Their best running back's a rookie. The offensive line was getting, remember, their draft pick got hurt. They had to go get a right tackle, put him at left, and Edelman missed September. Tom Brady, 29 touchdowns, 11 picks, 66% completion percentage, 4,300 yards. That had been Cam Newton's best year by a mile. Working with the least he's ever had. So just remember that. The other thing that's important to remember is I think a lot of people feel New England is old. Gronk is. And Tom Brady is. One will not be a Patriot next year. It's a very good tight end class in the NFL draft. Gronk won't be a Patriot. But you're forgetting that New England's core is mostly really young. Stephon Gilmore is 28. Trey Flowers is 25. Sony Michel is 23. James White's 26. Trent Brown, the left tackle, is 25. Steven Goskowski's their kicker. He'll play forever. Shaq Mason's their best offensive lineman, 25. And Jawan Bentley, a rookie, is 22. Won the starting job last year as a rookie at linebacker and got hurt. And that's something interesting here. Two rookies popped for them in camp. Isaiah Wynn, a first rounder, and Jawan Bentley, a fifth rounder. They also had Duke Dawson and Braxton Berrios. They all got hurt. So they have four young players, two, Jawan Bentley and Isaiah Wynn, they think are going to be stars. They didn't play this year. One starting roles, didn't play. They also have 12 draft picks. So they'll actually become one of the middle to younger teams in the league next year as Gronk's term expires. So don't forget this. Number one, Brady had very good numbers considering Edelman didn't play in September. Gronk's pretty much a shot fighter and no deep threat. They still had very solid offensive numbers. They are 12 draft picks, and actually you could count it as 16 because four draft picks last year, they were planning to play major minutes. Two, in fact, looked like stars in camp, had won starting roles. So there is this idea. Don't forget, the NFL is a year-to-year proposition. The three teams, I'll guarantee you, that will be good next year. Going to be good. Kansas City, New England, and the Colts. Everybody else, year-to-year proposition. Generally, I lean to the Steelers. But we thought Baltimore was that, and they eroded for about 3 years straight until this year with Lamar Jackson. Nobody takes the Texans seriously. They implode in the playoffs. We like the Chargers, but they just melted down, and they play in a tough division. We don't know what we're getting with Gruden. Sam Darnold and Adam Gase could be interesting, but it's a dysfunctional organization. So, you know, what Andy Reid says is, I'm looking at tape, I don't see the decline. And what I think a lot of people misunderstand, New England has a chance to be very young next year outside of Brady. And he's not showing huge decline. It is a very good draft for the two things New England needs. Tight end and a wide receiver. And it's a deep draft, not a ton of stars, but a deep draft with both. They've got 6 picks in the first 3 rounds, 12 overall. And I think a lot of people are forgetting. 4 draft picks last year got hurt, didn't play. 2 had earned starting roles, got hurt. So this is really, they're going to sustain this thing. Belichick's still the best coach in the league. It is still arguably the best home field advantage in the AFC. And Brady's Brady.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Over 30 years at NFL Films, one of my favorite segments of the week. We have 3 football games left until, you know, next year. And we bring in Greg Cosell. I want to start on the Rams and the Saints. That will be the first game. It'll be on Fox. So I want to start with this, Greg. The Saints offense, September, October, November, was one offense, pretty high-flying. Then they faced the Cowboys, and since then, yards per play has gone down, haven't been quite as dynamic. What is the film saying happened to the Saints?
Well, I think if you're being honest, Colin, in studying the tape, you will say that Drew Brees has not played particularly well over the last, I don't know when that started, but it was certainly the last 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season. I would say that he was uncharacteristically inaccurate, and by that I mean his ball placement wasn't quite as precise. I thought there were times, based on the route concepts and where I know that he should be going with the ball, that he didn't turn it loose a number of times. He did that. So I would say overall, if you're being honest in your evaluation, you would say that Drew Brees did not play at the same level.
Which I would argue is there's a number on Tom Brady that he's not quite been as good in December as he has been in October and early. That would point to fatigue and age. Is that unrealistic?
You know, that's hard to know for sure because now we're trying to just sort of speculate as to why that may be the case. You know, in the case of Brees, I don't know the answer to that. Brees has always been a quarterback that I think his lower body has been really important to his game. Not in terms of running around like, let's say, a Russell Wilson, but just how strong he is from in his lower body to move within the pocket and then to be able to drive the ball. Not necessarily with a power arm. He's not a power thrower, but just the ability to move, reset, stay on balance with a very firm base. Some might even look at the first play of the game against the Eagles last week when he had to stay in the pocket and sort of reset and try to drive a deep ball to Ted Ginn, and it came up short.
Yeah. The Rams are interesting. They kind of had to reboot. They were very dynamic early,
yep.
hit a rough stretch, and then they kind of rebooted against the Niners in Arizona, got a bye, and continued that sort of power running game they'd used against the Cardinals and Niners against the Cowboys. So they've kind of rebooted. I thought the bye week was kind of very important for this veteran offensive line to get rest, and they looked very sharp. But let's go to the Rams specifically. It does feel like they've gone back, or perhaps created with C.J. Anderson and Gurley, a little bit of a different offense than I saw early. It feels very run-centric.
Well, I think it's always been that way. It's just they've been more successful because that's the way they start their offense. During the regular season, keep in mind, they were the third best rushing team in the league, and they run the ball a lot. They were just very successful, and they're coming off the Cowboys game in which they did some really good things, some really nuanced things. They did a lot of tempo. They played against a Cowboys defense that's very quick, very fast, likes to move. So what they did is they went tempo, and they got Goff to the line of scrimmage. Now, he didn't always always snap the ball right away. Sometimes he waited till there were 3-4 seconds on the clock. But when you do that, the defense can't move. The defense has to be static. And they got the front looks that they wanted. They got the defense static, and they were able to attack those front looks. Their run game is all about attacking the front, the defensive front that they're facing, because their run game is not overly diverse. It's different terms different coaches use, but it's essentially outside zone and inside zone. So it's not a really diverse run game.
You know, it's interesting. Goff, I think we talked about this, had kind of a rough November. Teams have different personalities. Belichick's never been quite as, you know, New England in September, New England in January. They're two different teams sometimes. What do you make of the matchup with Goff? What do you like that he does well? When is he at his best?
Well, I think Goff is very much and this is not a negative term because I think this is what coaches should do. I think Goff is very much a programmed player. I think that when their offense works functionally and effectively in all its dimensions and he drops back and is relatively secure in the pocket, that he throws a beautiful ball. He's an easy thrower. He's a comfortable thrower. He has a good arm. For the most part, he's an accurate thrower. He lost some of his accuracy down the stretch. But when he's a comfortable player, within the context of a multi-dimensional offense, he's very pretty to watch. The ball comes out really well.
And that offensive line is healthy. Is it as good as any offensive line left in the playoffs?
Well, the one thing that has been talked about all year, I remember it was talked about with the Eagles a year ago, is all 5 starters played all 16 games.
Yes.
And I think that when you get to this point in the season, that's really important. It's not likely you'll have errors in cohesion and those kinds of things where there's assignment mistakes based on a lack of understanding of what you're trying to get done. So I think that's really important going forward.
By the way, Sean McVay and Sean Payton are considered very smart play designers, very clever offensive coaches. So people can kind of lump them in together. Do you see similarities or are they dissimilar sometimes?
Well, I think in their general approach, they're dissimilar because I think that Sean Payton is very much built on multiple personnel packages, multiple formation looks. Sean McVay doesn't do much of that at all. They line up in what we call 11 personnel with 3 wide receivers on probably 95% of their snaps,
yep.
And they're not that multiple with their formation looks. In fact, in the Week 9 game, they lined up in 11 personnel on every single snap, and the Saints defense lined up in nickel on every single snap. So now, here's a perfect example where teams have done things like this and it hasn't worked, and then people say, oh, you can't play like that. You're not creative. But for the Rams, it works.
Yeah. You know, a player that played against Bill Walsh in the Niners 20 years ago told me, he said the Niners ran 12 plays. They had 30 different looks. He goes, they only ran 12 plays. You know, and then I had a player that played with Sam Weiss and said, we had 1,600 plays. We just didn't do any of them well. I've always thought the number of plays is overblown. You have to disguise looks, but do what you do well in life and in football.
And the Rams are what they're trying to do with all that jet motion and the things that they do, even just with your base outside zone run look, is they're just trying to cause misreads based on how people have to react to what they're doing. You know, they're not fancy. They're not multiple in the way people think multiple, but they're just trying to cause defenders' eyes not to be in the right place, and then that causes them to be a beat late in their reactions.
Let's shift to the AFC. Good stuff. Greg Cosell joining us. So Patriots are 10-0 this year when they rush for 100 yards. They use their running backs as receivers very effectively.
Yep.
Sony Michel is now healthy. He's a very small but nimble, clever runner. He can go outside or inside the tackles. So when you look at their running game, where they're 10-0 when they get 100 yards, and you look at Kansas City's run defense, what does the film say?
Well, I think that the Patriots run game is, they run different concepts depending on the personnel that are on the field. They run certain concepts when they have 21 personnel, meaning the fullback Devlin is on the field, and they run other concepts when they're in 11 personnel with 3 wide receivers with Sony Michel. So, you know, it depends what the look is, and the Chiefs, I think, will line up with their personnel accordingly. My guess is they'll play their base defense against 21 personnel, and they'll be in nickel versus the 11 personnel, and you'll see different formations. One of the things the Patriots have always done, Colin, almost better than anybody over these last 5, 6, 7 years, is when they have base personnel on the field, they are so diverse with their formation looks that they create a lot of problems for defenses.
You know, I don't recall them playing any better than they did against the Chargers. I was shocked by their effectiveness. What blew you away on the film about New England's offense against what we consider to be excellent Charger personnel?
Well, I think that game was an odd game because of what the Chargers chose to do. The Chargers essentially chose to play with six defensive backs as their base defense. So when the Patriots lined up with a fullback on the field and big people, they had Devlin and Gronk on the field, the Chargers still had six defensive backs on the field, and they really got hurt with the run game through the first half. And again, that's what they chose to do. They spent all week taking that approach. They obviously thought it would be the best approach, but it hurt them.
Yeah. Let's go to Kansas City's offense. Tyreek Hill's the fastest player probably in football. He gave the Patriots fits, and I consider the Patriots secondary, you know, Devin McCourty, Stephon Gilmore. Generally, it's very well coached. Belichick has a history with DBs. I think they have a pretty good secondary, in my opinion. Maybe not as gifted as like a Chargers, but I think Gilmore's a terrific player. I think Devin McCourty's, you know, in his 30s, but he's a very good player. Tyreek Hill ate him alive. You know, Plaxico Burress was on my show 40 minutes ago, and he said, nobody takes away the inside routes like Belichick. They use the sideline as a defender. The Patriots, they had no success against Tyreek Hill, and they generally take away your big receiving threat. Why is he such a nightmare for them?
Well, keep this in mind. In the first game they played, and that was week six, Belichick made a decision. The decision he made in that game was that he was going to take away Kelce and not Hill. Now, he may change that decision in this game. You know, because one thing about the Chiefs is besides being very well schemed, they have very good personnel. And Hill presents a different issue because of the pure speed. But they are, there's certain defined tendencies that the Chiefs have in certain formations. And if I know that, Bill Belichick will know that. And I'll be very anxious to see what they do. One tendency in particular, when they go empty, and the Chiefs are very good out of empty, is they put Tyreek Hill in the inside slot to the trip side, what we call three strong.
Yeah.
And they tend to run him vertically from there. And you can't let him get over the top of you.
Yeah. So you're saying the Chiefs are a tad more predictable out of their sets?
Every team is. See, that's the thing. People think that these games are won and lost with cool stuff that no one's seen before. Everybody is predictable is probably not the right word. Everybody has tendencies, and teams know what the opponent's tendencies are. You don't win these games because you're tricking people and you're fooling people.
I'm going to throw a guy's name out. I don't even know if we have tape for him that I think is going to be big this weekend. Chris Jones, defensive lineman for the Chiefs. He has emerged, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but it seems in the last 2 months, he has emerged as a real force, a really difficult guy to block. My takeaway on this game is if New England struggles with him and has to double him, it could affect the run game. Just talk a little about Kansas City's defensive front. I think I'm not saying Aaron Donald or Fletcher Cox, but boy, when I watch Kansas City play, Greg, he is hard to stay in front of.
Well, this will be purely a function, in my view, and this is not profound, Colin, but it speaks to what you're saying, of the Patriots being able to stay relatively on schedule. Because when they're playing well, and when you saw them last week, it seemed as if Brady got the ball out so quick.
Yes.
They were rarely in long yardage situations. There may be no more patient quarterback that I can remember than Tom Brady in willing to throw the ball 5 yards. And very often those 5 yard gains become 8 yard gains. And while that may not appear on a highlight, that's a big play, particularly if it's first down. You know, then it's second and two. So the key thing to limit not only Chris Jones working inside, but just Houston, who didn't play week six, and D Ford, is the ability to stay within the schedule of the offense, and then the ball comes out so quick.
Yeah.
And that's the key for the Patriots. When Brady's secure, and I thought this year one of the differences with Brady is he wasn't as good when there were people around him as he's been in years past.
Yeah.
So if you can keep him secure and get the ball out, it might negate that pass rush.
Well, Joey Bosa, I was watching film last night. Joey Bosa, they had him mic'd. He was just frustrated. He kept going to the sideline saying, he's getting rid of the ball.
He can't get there.
He can't get there. He's like, it doesn't matter how good our pass rush is.
Right.
And I look up and the ball's down the field. All right, your big play this week is Brady to Edelman against the Chiefs. Roll it. Tell us what you got.
We'll jump right into it. So let's start it right now.
Okay.
And this was a 17-yard touchdown pass from Brady to Edelman. And it was very reflective of this first matchup in a number of ways. And we'll start with the fact that the Patriots go with a trips formation here to the field. And this is what they do a lot of. You see the three receivers. It's a trips formation. It's a bunch formation. And the Chiefs are playing man-to-man. They play a lot of man coverage. You're going to see this. But now the other thing, which is really representative of the first game and what the Chiefs do, is the Chiefs rushed three. Okay, they rushed three, and they dropped two defenders as kind of underneath lurkers. And so this is what they did many snaps in that game. It was cover one, man coverage, behind a three-man rush, two lurkers. Now you get to the matchup of Edelman versus Fuller, and they'll take that every time. Fuller's a good player, but they like that matchup. They'll take Edelman in the slot versus Fuller all day long. But that's something to really watch for in this game, because the Chiefs, they rush three quite a bit. That's part of what they do, and they like to play coverage, but they play man coverage with those two free defenders, which I think they'll do against New England.
Yeah. Who's got the better offensive line, by the way? What's the film say?
Well, they're different because the offenses are different. You know, there's more deep drops for Kansas City, and there's more quick drops for the Patriots. So, you know, that's a hard call. They just play totally differently.
Yeah. You do like Kansas City's defensive front better than New England's, though Trey Flowers is pretty good.
Well, as an individual group, yes. You know, the Patriots don't have that one pass rusher like a Dee Ford or a Justin Houston, and Chris Jones is certainly very good on the inside. So, you know, as individuals, the Chiefs are better.
Yeah, I can't wait for this. I really do. I think it's very easy to look at Kansas City and say, payback, big weekend. But I'll tell you this, New England was 4-0 against playoff teams this year, and they have a tendency to be very, very good in these big games. So I just can't wait.
I'm glad it's going to be downright balmy now, at least in the 20s, as opposed to zero.
No kidding. Greg, great talking to you.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
One of the reasons I don't like the term hot take is because sports delivers the amazing. Sports delivers the unpredictable. Things happen in sports that would be ridiculous to predict. And yet, over time, they happen. Very rarely in sports is it predictable. And so these days, everybody's afraid to have a strong opinion because social media will brand it a hot take. Well, right now, social media is having something called the 10-year challenge. You go back to 2009 and you show pictures and you compare them to yourself and compare yourself to now, 2019. And I thought it would be interesting to go back 10 years to look at things we could have said would happen in sports and how absolutely absurd it would have sounded 10 years ago, and they all came true. So let's actually go back in time.
It's time to look back at the year 2009 to see how much has changed, how different people looked, and whatever was going on with Goulet in this photo. Get ready for The Herd special version of the 10-year challenge.
Okay, a hot take. 2009, this would have been a hot take. The Patriots dynasty? I know Brady's hurt. It's going to last another 10 years, and he's still going to be an MVP at 40. That's exactly what happened. Tom Brady was an MVP at 40. Mm. In 2009, he was coming off an injury. Peyton Manning was in his prime, just turning the corner to the back nine, and the dynasty would last double the length of the longest dynasty, Steelers, in NFL history, 10 years ago. How about this one? Tony Romo will only appear in a Super Bowl as an announcer. What if I would have said that in 2009? He was only a third-year starter for the Cowboys.
Well, I would have believed you, but...
By the way, he is now younger than Brady and Breeze, who are playing this weekend. Only in his third year as a starter. Had just won a playoff game. I come on the air and say, he will, 10 years from now, be doing the Super Bowl as an announcer. He won't even be playing. Well, that's actually true. It gets better. the NFL's best future coach is a 22-year-old assistant in Tampa. His name is Sean McVay. He'll go on to coach the Florida Tuskers of the United Football League.
That's something, huh?
He will go on. He was the youngest assistant in the league. He will go on to be the most duplicated, copied coach in the National Football League from the Florida Tuskers. How about this one? This is why you got to be careful about saying it's a hot take. Sports delivers the insane. In 2009, I said, Davidson Jr. shooting guard Steph Curry will revolutionize the NBA. In 2009, he missed the tournament. He couldn't make the tournament. He has since gone on to win the first unanimous MVPs, three NBA titles, currently has set the record for the most threes in a season three separate times. 10 years ago, you'd be laughed off sports radio for saying, that little guy that just missed the tournament will revolutionize professional basketball forever. How about this? If I said 10 years ago, centers in the NBA will become mostly irrelevant. 2009, Dwight Howard was an MVP candidate and led the Orlando Magic to the NBA Finals. He has now been on five teams and never reached the finals again. Even the NBA franchise, the Lakers, known as the final landing spot for most of the great centers, had him, and in the end weren't that truly interested, nor was he interested in the Lakers. How about this one? 10 years ago, 10-year challenge. If I'd have said, hey, LeBron's going to be a Laker. What? That would have been an incredible hot take. In 2009, the biggest rivalry in the NBA was LeBron against Kobe and the Lakers. The Lakers won the title that year. Certainly didn't appear to need LeBron. LeBron is now on his fourth team. That in itself would have been a crazy hot take. If I'd have said he leaves Cleveland and comes back. How about this one? 2009, 10-year challenge. Be careful about saying hot take. If I'd have said 2009, hey, Tiger Woods never win another major. What? In 2009, Tiger Woods had won 14 majors and was on pace to shatter Jack Nicklaus's record of 18. Woods has won a major, I think, what is it, one since winning the U.S. Open in 2008. Tiger had been the world's number one ranked golfer since June of 2005 to 2009. He was the most dominant golfer on the planet. There was no second place. Mickelson was seen as a large Grand Canyon gap behind him. 2009, Tiger will never win another major. How about this? If I'd have said this 10 years ago. Now think about this. The Chicago Cubs will become one of baseball's best franchises. They had a horrible facility. In 2009, they'd got 101 years without winning a World Series. They have now, over the last 4 years, amassed 387 wins. That is the most in Major League Baseball. But how about the craziest thing if I'd have said this 10 years ago? Clemson will blow out Alabama to win the college football playoff and get served McDonald's by President Donald Trump.
Oh, man.
That would have been the craziest hot take of all time, and that's exactly what happened. Not only is it a surprise that Clemson now was the dominant force, because Clemson, at that time in 2009, hadn't won double-digit games in 19 years. So Clemson's not only the crazy story. The guy in the White House, kind of a crazy story.
Yeah, that picture will be in history books. Our grandchildren will see that picture.
But it is interesting. Whenever anybody says hot take, I always say, time out. Sports, the truly bizarre happens. Yeah. A junior at Davidson who can't make the tournament changes the world. Tiger falls off a cliff. Donald Trump becomes president and serves Clemson McDonald's. LeBron becomes a Laker. I mean, the Cubs become, along with the Red Sox, you know, arguably the best analytic team in baseball.
I think maybe the NBA centers and Tom Brady are the most bizarre. I mean, obviously, like, no one other than Steph Curry could have predicted it, what Steph Curry has done.
Think about this. In our lifetime, Joy, dynasties in the NFL lasted about 6 years. I mean, the Steelers were about seven. You got about 6 years of this stuff. Then your players fell apart. Players couldn't play forever.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, you can do so much more now with nutrition. And,
it's incredible. 2009, yeah. They'd already been to the Super Bowl three times. Brady just got hurt. And in 10 years from now, they'll win their division every year for a decade. You'd be like, well, nobody can last that long. Brady's thrown a touchdown pass to 74 different people. Like, it's insane to even think what they're doing. So I always blanch at hot take. I love sportscasters who not only report on just what happened, but are not afraid to go out and say, I think this is going to happen. Social media shames you and mocks you for doing that. But the guys that I listen to or the gals I listen to on Sports Talk Radio and Sports Radio are not just reporting what did happen. They're projecting what they think will happen. That's what I think sports is. What's great about sports, it delivers the wildly unpredictable.